We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, everybody? How we doing? Welcome to a very early in the week edition of NBA Friday. We're going post Laker game edition of the show tonight. Part of the Riverfront Podcast Network, part of the Blue Wire Media Network. I'm Tim Daniel. I'm here with Kevin Lynch. Kevin's back this week. I caught him just as he was taking a drink of water, so I apologize.
All good.
All right. We are good. Man. So, obviously, what a game is where we could start. And there's like so many different dynamics of the game we can discuss. Mm-hmm. And I know the obvious storyline is going to be Zion Williamson finally gets a postseason game. He's incredible, has 40 points. But on the shot where he hits his 40th point and ties the game, he gets injured.
Yes. On brand, as we were talking about off camera.
Dude, was unreal in this game, like going right at LeBron, going right at AD. I text you in the first quarter. It didn't start that way. Mm-hmm. You could definitely see that LeBron was playing very far off him, daring him to shoot.
Yeah.
But as the game went on, he was finding cuts. He was catching LeBron when LeBron was ball watching, and he was taking advantage of it. You saw that multiple times in this game.
Yeah. No, it's what it should be with Zion all the time. He was the most athletic guy in the game. He took advantage of it,
Yeah.
I mean, that's what earlier in the year, everyone was kind of, there was like the, being out of shape thing that people were making fun of him for. And then a lot of like the fact that three-fourths of the way through the year, he's averaging like five and a half rebounds a game or something. Like the guy's the most athletic guy on the floor. There's no reason he shouldn't be double-digit rebounds, but he was phenomenal tonight. It was a shame that he missed the last 3 minutes. You can tell how frustrated he is. I thought it looked like a foot, maybe, like his foot. But yeah, and it was kind of an old school, like 90s, early 2000s NBA game, right? Like,
yeah.
not very, very intense, but not very pretty. And the Lakers just kind of didn't play very well in the fourth quarter, but made the last few plays at the end.
Yeah, they did. Man, there's a lot of different ways we can go here. Just because, like I said, there's so much to talk about from this game. Mm-hmm. Let's focus a little bit on the Pelicans for the time being. Then we'll get to the Lakers, because obviously, to the victors go the spoils, and we'll talk a little bit how we feel like they could match up against Denver, which I don't know. I'm sure we know how that's going to go, but we'll talk about it still. So a couple things I want to point out. I understand Zion not being on the floor for obvious reasons at the end of the game. Where the hell is Brandon Ingram?
I mean, but like, I agree with you. It's a tough call. Like, I give the Willie Green, the coach, like a little bit of slack, because do you go with your best players or the guys playing best that night?
Right.
Because Ingram looked terrible. Like, CJ McCollum looked terrible, and they held him out most of the fourth quarter too. And it was the lineup without those two guys that when New Orleans made their run, I think they were down, 14 or so in the fourth quarter, and they made 18, the run.
Yeah.
18, yeah. Okay. So they made the run with who it was alongside Zion. It was like Nance, Alvarado, Murphy, and Herb Jones, right? Like it was those five. Yeah. And they just got more athletic and just ran the offense through Zion and Alvarado a lot of the time, had a fantastic game. But so I don't know. It's a tough call when it's like a one game series. Like, do you go with the guys playing the best that night or your best players, even if they're playing bad? So I don't know if I would have done different.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. I just have a hard time. If I'm a Pelicans fan, I'm probably frustrated that, you know, I don't have Brandon Ingram on the floor for that. But neither here nor there. But so you mentioned Jose Alvarado playing like the game of his life. he's one of those guys that if he's on your team, you probably love him. When you're playing against him, he drives you insane. He definitely has that vibe. And tonight was one of those games when he was driving me insane. And but you know, he was awesome. And you mentioned Trey Murphy. I mean, Trey Murphy, you know, that deep three hits at the end of the third, and he hits another one in the fourth. And it's like you're seeing the guy that you thought he was gonna be in, like when he left Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, this is awesome. Shout out Chad and Nate. Had to make sure I got some conversation in there so that they keep me on payroll. And then Larry Nance was really good today, too.
Yeah.
It sucks in the sense that obviously with Zion out, because I feel like I'd be pretty comfortable picking them to win on Thursday if Zion's there. But because I think that the crowd was awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, that was the Smoothie King Center had an awesome crowd. The loudest I've ever heard that arena. Maybe, you know, the Davis days when it was him going against the Warriors and by himself, basically. But I think that, we're recording during the Warriors game, so we don't have like a analysis on that on the 8-9 game or 8-10 game, whatever it's going to be, 7-10 game, I guess. but I can't pick them to beat Golden State without Zion Williamson. There's just no way. I can't. I mean, Sacramento, I think they can fight with them, but there's just no way that they can beat either one of those teams without him.
I agree. I mean, if they don't have him, you think you have an extremely rusty Brandon Ingram, like never look comfortable in this game. And then and then CJ McCollum coming off of one of his worst games of the year, I think tonight. And those are your three best players. I don't know how you could be confident going into a, you know, win or go home game with all that going on.
Yeah, and I had to make sure I mentioned this one time before we move on, because New Orleans has been a top 10 defense throughout the year. Mm-hmm. Tonight, their defense was horrid for really long stretches.
Yeah.
And Najee Marshall can't get some clock. I mean, he's a defensive player. Like, that's his thing. I mean, we can't throw Najee Marshall in to guard. Maybe not LeBron, because LeBron was really good scoring-wise in the first quarter. But, like, you can't put him on D'Angelo Russell as he's going off, or Austin Reeves. Like, come on, Willie G. Like, you got to – your defense wasn't there tonight. Give my man some clock in that situation.
I don't disagree with that. I thought they played well on defense, like in the first and fourth quarter, but the second and third was where kind of Lakers dominated and everything. And maybe we could use this as a transition to talking about the Lakers. I thought they started out with Herb Jones on LeBron and held LeBron really in check in the first quarter.
Yeah.
Then they went to Zion and other guys on him in quarters two and three, and LeBron kind of took over the game in those stretches. And then they finally went back to Herb Jones on him in the fourth quarter, and LeBron was really bad in the fourth quarter. So I don't know why they ever went away from that, to be honest. I didn't know if you really noticed that as well.
I did. We just found out. So we've got – this is the times for the game Saturday. Mm-hmm. Orlando, Cleveland at 1, Phoenix, Minnesota at 3:30. This is all Eastern time. Kevin lives in Nashville, so Miami, Philadelphia, the winner of that game will get the Knicks at 6:00, and then Lakers, Denver at 8:30 on Saturday. So marathon of basketball, always love it. I think that, like you mentioned, so you have that situation there where Herb Jones is really, really good on LeBron, like most of the game. And then they're like, oh, well, you know, that worked. Let's not do it again.
Yeah,
it's like, okay, sure. I think Willie Green's a good coach. I'm not trying to discredit anything he did here, but I think that he just said it's leg soreness for Zion. So hopefully that means he's playing Thursday.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
History says.
Well, I was thinking, like, if it's soreness, why wasn't he in the game?
Right. Like, were they like? Were they like, let's just avoid the Nuggets and we'll just have him ready for the Thursday night?
So I thought that was, and you heard people saying like that was their take. The Lakers should throw this game.
Yeah.
And then it went, you don't do that, because then what happened? You do that and then you have the,
you lose to Golden State.
You lose to Golden State, or even you go into that game and AD turns his ankle 30 minutes into that game.
Right.
And then you're like, then your season's over. Like, I don't think you ever take anything for granted. And if you're going to win the playoffs, you got to go through the best teams at some point. Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I may have said that in a joking manner on Sunday night that maybe they should just take their chances to play OKC on Sunday. But I was joking. I wasn't serious about it. But yeah, I mean, I think you'd probably want to play them now when LeBron's probably got all his energy at this point, right?
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. Like Lakers, you know, the Lakers, they're the team that you would worry about going deeper in the playoffs with fatigue with LeBron, injury with AD, even though he's been healthy all year. You know, yeah. They're not very deep at all. They played nine guys tonight, but two of them played 8 minutes or less. And so, I agree. Like, if their best chance to beat Denver might be in the first round, opposed to, you know, 3 or 4 weeks from now when they're more worn down or possibly more injured.
Yeah, I agree, man. So let's kind of talk about there. Like I said, there's a few different angles we can go. And I first want to start with, I'm so glad Gabe Vincent is playing again, because that means that we didn't have to have Spencer Dinwiddie play big minutes in this game. That was great. Anthony Davis. So for everything he didn't do offensively today, he was really good defensively. And, you know, 81% free throw shooter. So the fact he was able to get himself to the line, because he knew he wasn't hitting shots, was awesome. That rebound he had at the end of the game to basically seal the game.
Play of the game. Yeah.
Yeah. That was awesome. I love AD. I'm a huge AD guy, obviously. And so to see him kind of have that moment in that arena after everything that happened with that franchise had to feel pretty good for him, I imagine.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, AD is one of those guys who his numbers look great, but his impact is bigger than his numbers for sure. When you defensively controlling the paints, all the things they do to run offense through him that doesn't result in a stat, but results in, you know, success. So I couldn't agree more. I thought AD wasn't his best game, but he was very solid, if not very good tonight. And definitely made the key plays at the end. You, like I said, the rebound, the hitting the free throws, a couple of defensive plays. Like he was great.
Yeah, he was. And before the half, I sent something in the Slack group about, I was like, you know, before Zion hits that buzzer beating layup, it's like, man, what a disastrous ending to the half for New Orleans, because AD basically stops Jonas Valanciunas from scoring a bunny right there, right before the half ends. And then they go down and they turn the ball over. They get LeBron goes to the line because they fouled him on the, you know, right underneath the basket. So AD kind of really starting that going before, of course, Zion responds. The vitriol that crowd had for him, and the fact that he kind of was just like shrugged it off and went at them, was really awesome. I always loved those moments.
Yeah.
So that was great. I think what they were able to do tonight that was the most impressive, and we're going to get through individual players, obviously, really balanced scoring tonight from the guys that were playing big minutes.
Yeah.
So Russell obviously had another really good shooting game. You know, LeBron didn't have his best shooting game, but the 9 rebounds, 9 assists, Austin Reeves, double digits. Rui Hachimura played really well, actually, for a majority of this game.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily remember what his number said, but this goes on the impact of everything other than what the stat line says. Let me pull him up real fast just to make sure I got this right. No, I don't want to misquote.
And the one other thing, and you said on top, like, I thought Gabe Vincent kind of changed the flow of the game in the second quarter when he came in. Hit some huge shots, like was on the ground for a couple loose balls. And it's obviously a guy they were counting on and was gone for most of the year and has been so good in the playoffs when he was with Miami that could be, you know, X factor-ish for the Lakers. If he can come in and give them 20 good minutes, hit some big shots, you know, kind of change the momentum of the game like he did tonight. I thought he was huge.
He was. And like we mentioned, You don't have to play Spencer Dinwiddie in those circumstances now.
Yeah.
So that was nice. And just having the additional ball handler. And you mentioned, obviously, a guy who was so good with the Miami. He's a guy who had to play in the play-in last year and went to the finals. So not that I think history is going to repeat itself, though as much as I would love for it too. Obviously, that came through big. So, and then we mentioned Rui, 5 of 6 from the floor, 13 points. Obviously, it was a little out physical. And that's going to happen when you play guys like Zion and Valanciunas. Mm-hmm. But I thought, you know, this, the 2 threes he hit, he was 2 for 2 from three, were huge for the game. Especially in a game where, you know, LeBron is 6 of 20, AD 6 of 16, and they had to rely on everyone else. LeBron went 10 of 10 from the line tonight.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. That's that is, he's never, what's he usually around 70% for his career?
Yeah. Like 66 to 70 area.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, and they needed every one of them. The team was 26 of 29. Like the team was 90% as the team, and what took about 15 more free throws than New Orleans. So some of that was the end when they were fouling. They got the six or so at the end, but yeah, the probably the biggest difference that sticks out to me on like the stat sheet.
Yeah, I agree. All right. We gotta give him some. We are very quick to criticize D'Angelo Russell, and for about 96% of his career, rightfully so. But once again, really good tonight. I don't know if you've looked since the turn of the new year, has been very good offensively. I actually had his numbers up earlier. Let me see if I can pull these back up real quick. So this is by the month that he has had. Okay. Let me find it again. I had it and now I don't have it. Here we go. All right. So October, he shot 30% from three. November had a really, it was 44%. That's during the postseason, the in-season tournament run, obviously. December, not very good. January, 46%. February, 42%. March, 42%. April, 39%. Goes out tonight in a game where you mentioned, like, they needed everything they could get offensively. 21 points, 6 assists, 7 of 14 from the floor, 5-11 from three, in 36 minutes, was a plus 16 on the floor. Mm-hmm. And his usage rate has been high for all of this stretch. So, look, man, everyone wants to be mad at D'Angelo Russell all the time. They wanted him traded. I was one of those people. He's been really, really good for months now. It's not a trend anymore. This is a thing.
Well, he's playing within himself for one of the first times in his career, right. And yeah. not trying to do too much. And like, kind of letting the offense come to him and picking his spots, opposed to try and, I don't know, insert himself in the game or something like that. I mean, I thought when him and Alvarado was going out tonight, I was worried that was going to throw Russell off, you know, make him go into like hero ball, like an outplay this guy. But I think the biggest difference with him these last few months is like just playing with composure I think he's probably taking, I don't know if that's word, but like shot selection, so much better shots than he normally does. And catch shooting threes off the catch, he is one of the better people in the league at. Yeah. Like he really is. And when he focuses on, you know, seeking out those shots opposed to, you know, dribbling for 20 seconds of the shot clock and then putting up a shot, he's significantly better.
Yeah, well, you mentioned kind of just playing within yourself and all those things and not trying to do hero ball. And I think one of the things when you look at his career that really kind of gets overlooked is, okay, his first Lakers run, Kobe's at the end of his career, twilight, barely playing, towards Achilles, going on their farewell tour. Who else are they going to rely on to score? Goes to Brooklyn. Caris LeVert has that really good year there. They go to the playoffs. He's D'Lo's an all-star, but still kind of doing that thing. Has a half year Golden State. Clay's out. Steph's hurt. Mm-hmm. They're terrible. Mm-hmm. Someone's got to shoot. Mm-hmm. Goes to Minnesota. You got Kat, and that was fine, but you needed someone in the backcourt. Here, it's kind of a situation where it's like not just LeBron and AD. It's like I've got Austin Reeves, who I can rely on. I've got Rui Hachimura. I feel like this is probably just something where, and obviously anyone playing with LeBron as an additional ball handler is going to have that advantage. But I think this is kind of a situation for him now where it's like you said, like, okay, I don't have to like try to win every game and win this game in every possession by myself. I have other options and I can just kind of let things kind of come to me a little more. And this is a guy who got benched for a stretch this year and got put back in the starting lineup. He had his name like all over the world in trade rumors for weeks between Christmas and the trade deadline and just kept showing up and doing his thing, man. So I gotta give the kudos.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. It's one of those things I can't put my finger on, but he's definitely I don't want to say a different player, but playing a different style, playing a different game these last few months. And it's far more efficient and far more productive for the Lakers.
Yeah, I agree. And then of course, LeBron just always finding ways to do insane things. 23-9-9 on 6 of 20 shooting. There were some moments where I was very, very annoyed by him tonight as a invested fan, not the betting side of things, which we both did not go either of our ways. But he would get that switch on to Alvarado, and it maybe just, you know, his legs probably were just shot is a possibility. But there were so many times where it's like he gets the switch and he wants, they get Herb Jones off of him, and he's got Alvarado in the post. And I'm like, just back him in, man. Like, you're a foot taller than this guy. You got 100 pounds on the guy. You're the most dominant player ever besides Shaquille O'Neal. Like, just go to the rim. And it was like when they would blitz late. I understood that portion of it, but there's a lot of times I was like, dude, just do your thing. And it's like, instead he has a turnover. He throws a bad pass to someone who's doesn't get a shot off. And it was just a little frustrating.
Yeah, no, it is, and it's very ironic the two of us like criticizing one of the couple of best players to ever live. We won't get into if he's the best or not, but like, I agree with you. I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, just go as soon as he gets the ball in that matchup. Like, you know, him being analytical and he's one of the highest IQ basketball players to ever play. And so like, who am I to criticize him? But like, like you said, you get that matchup, just go straight to the rim, beat the blitz, you know, before they have a chance to. And yeah, I thought he definitely left some on the table tonight, particularly in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Even Reggie Miller was like at points in the game from commentary was like, it's time to move, man. You got to go. Like it's go time. Like, and so, but hey, they won. So we can't be too mad.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Let's look ahead to Denver before we get into everything else.
Okay.
Obviously, I can't tell you the last time the Lakers beat the Nuggets, maybe in 2020 in the bubble. When they knocked him out of the Western Conference Finals, I feel like I'm sure there's been one since then, but I can't remember it right now. Multiple times this year, they've had games where they've looked pretty good against them, and just, you know, the Nuggets are so sound and so efficient. I'm not going to go on here and be like, do they beat the Nuggets? Because I'm sure no one's going to pick them. But like we kind of said earlier, we both kind of said that we feel like this is the best time to play them. Instead of in the middle of May or anything like that. But when you look at this matchup and you mentioned the fact that they aren't very deep, there is probably two or three guys, but they're going to play Jackson Hayes just for the sake of needing a big body to give fouls away to Jokic in times probably. What do you think about this matchup? I feel like they can win a couple games. I just don't know if I'm at the point where I can bet on them to win a series.
No, if everyone's healthy and Denver's playing anywhere close to their top game, I don't think the Lakers can win. It's just how it is. But like, you know, particularly Murray could turn his ankle that he seems to turn two or three times a year in game one. And that team, obviously without Jokic, but without Murray, it's a completely different team
too. Yeah.
So, you know, obviously I like everyone else had picked Denver. If both teams are full strength and play close to their best games, Denver will win, my guess is in five or six. But you play the games, and maybe, you know, maybe game one, you have an insane LeBron game, or maybe your guy, D'Angelo Russell rides his wave and hits 10 threes and they steal game one and start making these series interesting. So, you know, play the games and hope for the best.
Yeah. I think that altitude, the fact you got to be there for the Nuggets having home court advantage, you want to do everything you possibly can to win game one.
Yeah.
You want to flip the series around immediately, because going there for game, you know, if you somehow make it a long series, you got to go there for game seven. No thanks. God, yeah. You're already worn out and you got to play in that air. That sounds terrible.
Yeah.
Things people don't think about for the NBA players, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Lakers need to get a little bit lucky. Like I said, one guy have a crazy, good game and just try and play their strength. They need to just pound it inside. Maybe they get, you know, somebody in foul trouble, whatever. Something out of the norm happens to kind of flip the series in their favor. But yeah, I mean, we'll see. That's why you play the games. And I would certainly bet on Denver, but I also don't make a habit of betting against LeBron either.
Yeah, not my thing. refuse to do it, actually. All right. So let's go ahead and we're going to go right to each conference. And one of the things we're going to do here is we're just talk about the things for these playoffs we're most excited for. We're going to do three things in the East, three things in the West. I don't know if we agree to be three total between the two of us or three each, but we can decide as we go. Sure. So I want to start in the East. And so the series we know for sure at the moment are obviously Indiana and Milwaukee and then Cleveland and Orlando. And Cleveland-Orlando is for sure going to be like the NBA TV series that no one really is going to care about.
Yep.
Except me. I'm going to love every second of it because I absolutely love both these teams. And I'm very excited for this game. And when you list off the star power for this series compared to everyone else, it's very lack thereof.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at it as far as basketball fan, you're like, okay, so you got Cole Anthony, Jalen Suggs, Franz Wagner, Paolo Banchero going against Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, you know, Evan Mobley. I'm like, this is kind of fun. this is a series of two teams that are kind of heading the right direction, depending what happens with Mitchell's future with Cleveland. Last time you were on, we did a deep dive into the Cavs and if they're really as good as their record says they are. But I am stoked for this series. I cannot wait to see it play out. I love watching both these teams play, and I will be tuned in to every matchup as long as it's not during a Reds game.
Yeah, no, I agree. What I look for in the first round, because in the first round, most commonly the better teams win, right?
Right.
And the series aren't, half of the series are not very competitive. So the thing that gets me excited for the first round is like, which like young stars like perform like stars in the playoffs. And this series has several of them, like for first or maybe second time, like in the playoff stage. I mean, and if you look around the playoffs, like, I mean, Anthony Edwards is a good example. How's he going to do in the first playoffs? Tyrese Halliburton. I can't wait to see what Paolo does in the, like, hey. Yes, all the Cavs guys, but like Paolo was incredible this year for his age and his first time in the playoffs. Very, very interested to see how he looks, even if it's on NBA TV.
Ah, man. So I am stoked for that. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm a big Paolo fan, even though he went to Duke. I don't dislike Duke in the sense of Kentucky fans do. It's just kind of like, oh, there's Duke again. But anytime those guys declare for the draft, I completely forget where they went to school anyway. So Dude, he's so fun and he's so talented. And Franz has become such a great number two offensive option for them with his shooting ability. That draft pick was owned by the Chicago Bulls, by the way. Another tally mark in the Chicago Bulls front office doing really wonderful things for other teams. Way to go, guys. Just had to have Nikola Vucevic there, didn't you? That's another story. But I think the one thing I look at for Cleveland in this series is obviously we know how good they are defensively. And I think, too, Darius Garland did not have a very good year. So I think for him, you know, he's a former All-Star. Obviously, everyone's going to like think too. It's hard to get over the Knicks series last year and what happened to them. And I get that. I thought they had a great offseason. We talked about the Max Strus, Georges Niang, I think were awesome gets for them. But if you're Darius Garland and you're trying to put this disappointing season behind you, now's kind of your chance. I mean, you're going against Cole Anthony, Markelle Fultz, Jalen Suggs. I love Jalen Suggs as a perimeter defender. I love Markelle Fultz. The fact that he made something out of his career from what everything that happened when he kind of got the yips there for a little while. But I think Garland's the best one of all those guys we just named. So, and you've got the better running mate. So here's your chance to kind of make everyone forget about how disappointing you were and go win a series.
That's the number one thing I'm excited about for this series is the matchup of the offense of Mitchell and Garland versus the defense of Jonathan Isaac and Jalen Suggs.
Yeah.
Because that's like outside of Paolo, that's strength on strength. Like Isaac and Suggs could definitely both be all defensive team. Isaac probably won't because of lack of games and minutes and everything. But I think that's strength on strength, and kind of whoever wins that like 2-on-2, I think it'll determine the series.
Yeah, I agree. I think if I have to pick a team at the moment, I'm going to take the Cavs, but I don't have a set in stone pick just yet.
I'll take the Magic.
Nice. Okay. That's all right. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, it's a fun series.
Yeah, it is. All right. So my first thing I'm excited about the East playoffs, it's not like, I guess, so much first round as the playoffs overall. Like, is this the year the Celtics can close the deal? Like, because they've been so good several years in a row, Eastern Conference Finals, NBA playoff appearances, and now, or NBA final appearances. And this is the best team they've had of several years of very, very good teams. The one stat, like their net rating, which is like 11.9, they average winning by 11.9 points a game overall. It's the best net rating since the 97 Bulls. And like basically every team that has double digit net ratings either ends up in the finals or wins the NBA championship. So like everything statistically, everything eye test wise would tell you this is the team where the floor should be the NBA finals. And not much higher than that would be just winning it, depending on the matchup and everything. So it's not the craziest thing, but like I like seeing they were far and away the best team in the regular season in the whole NBA, not just the Eastern Conference. Like, can they close the deal in the playoffs? Can they? And so that's what I'm really interested to see.
Well, I hate the Celtics very much, but they are without a doubt the best team. And I think that there's a situation where the Nuggets and the Celtics would have played each other in the finals. As a basketball fan, I would absolutely love that. Just because it'd be such good basketball. As a fan of a team, I would hate that, but that's not what we're here for. This is by far just getting Porzingis did so much for them. And then getting Drew Holiday, obviously, who they signed to an extension. The team's so deep, and you talk about, they don't even have to be deep with how talented they are. You know what I mean? Like with those dudes, the Tatums, the Browns, the Porzingis, the Holidays, Al Horford, still kind of 97 years old out there. People talk about LeBron being so old. I mean, he's probably not too far behind him. Just going out there and still playing good basketball. Yeah, I think they're the best team. I mean, you know, they're going to probably play Miami in the first round. That's probably the team they don't want to play. I think if Embiid's healthy, that the Sixers are going to run through the Heat, and we'll talk about that in the next segment. But I think that they, yeah, dude, they're just so good. And I don't know how much more I can add to that.
Yeah, no, for sure. And sorry to take two turns in a row, but my second one kind of goes with this. So I'll take two and then I'll
go for it
if you want. Is who's going to step up to challenge them in the East? Like, because it can, and this is kind of wrapping a lot of things into one. Can Giannis come back and the Bucks get right? Like, is that the team? Is it the Knicks who's been the best team in the Eastern Conference the second half of the year outside of the Celtics? Like, is now that Embiid's back, their seed won't matter and they can, you know, they can make a run. So that's kind of what I'm looking for. Who can challenge the Celtics? So I would hate to see, you know, one of those old Lakers runs where they go 12-0 going into the finals, or the Cavs did that too. Mm-hmm. And just kind of the one half of the bracket be frankly boring. So that's something I'm hoping that some team will step up to give them a real series at some point.
Yeah. This is the one where I definitely think the 7 and 8 from the play-in will be in the playoffs, just because the 8 teams there were so set in stone in the East. Like 9 and 10, like I root for the 9 team and I hate them. So I can tell you that that team does not stand a chance. They might win tomorrow, but they are not winning on Friday against one of those two teams. But yeah, I think that that's kind of a big thing. I'm going to go to the Pacers side in the sense that I don't think I'm going to pick them to beat the Bucks, but I am genuinely curious to see what this is the start of the foundation for, because they don't trade for Siakam and give all that stuff up if they're not re-signing him. There's just no way. They're not a team that can afford to take that risk. They just are not. And they have done a really good job drafting for a couple of years, since that they drafted Jairus Walker in the top 10 and didn't need him. Mm-hmm. He was playing for Fort Wayne. He was playing for the Mad Ants for a lot of the year. Tyrese Halliburton kind of had that weird minutes restriction, but now it seems like he's kind of full go again. And they have a lot of really good complementary pieces. They have maybe the best backup point guard in the league in TJ McConnell. Certainly not the most athletic, but everything else he does wins you basketball games. I think they're good enough to give Milwaukee a series. And what I mean by a series, I think they can go 6 or 7 games, especially because Milwaukee has not been very good since Doc Rivers came in. Their defense completely fell off with the loss of Jrue Holiday, like most teams would. But also the fact that their offense looks stagnant a lot of times, especially in the half court. Pat Beverly gave them a nice boost of attitude, but I'm sorry, if I'm going into an NBA series and I'm counting on Pat Beverly to win for me, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
You know, what's Pat Beverly going to do against if he comes in for bench minutes to fill in for Dame and he's guarding Tyrese Halliburton? Good luck with that. But what I say is I think the Bucks will win just for the sake of they have Giannis. And if Giannis is able to play, then they're gonna be fine. But as far as the Nets series, I should say. But what is this the beginning of for the Pacers? Because they're always competitive, they're never down long, and they draft so well and develop so well that I think Tyrese Halliburton's probably one of those guys that people are gonna want to play with.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. This feels like the kind of traditional, like, young team breaking through for the first time. They're playing with house money in the playoffs, and they're really building for the next year, two or three years, right? And so I agree. I mean, the underlying thing is Giannis back and is he healthy? Like, that completely dictates who I would pick in the series in general. And true. But even if Giannis is back, I could see the Pacers getting a win or two, especially at home. I think they have a great home environment, especially having not been in the playoffs in a long time. Yeah. So I see, even with Giannis, I would pick the Bucks in like 6. If there's no Giannis, I might pick the Pacers in 6, to be honest. Like that Milwaukee team, even more than previous years, completely relies on Giannis, especially defensively.
I think if Indiana had Ben Mathurin, I would be comfortable enough to pick them just because it'd be an additional scorer for them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. All right. So my third thing, I'm going to cheat a little bit here, and it's kind of for both conferences. So maybe we can answer this and it'd be our transition to the West or something. So it's kind of what we talked about is the young teams where the core of the team is in the playoff for the first time. So, and there's a few of them. There's you can kind of count the Cavs, even though it's their second year, but like really I'm looking at like the Magic, the Pacers, the Knicks, even like I would even include, even though they're there last year, I feel like the team had a enough changeover. I would almost throw them in. The T-Wolves and the Thunder are the ones I'm looking at. So like five teams that are all in the playoffs for the first, maybe the second time. And can any of them break through what traditionally happens, what we just talked about, right? A young team comes in, they might give a little fight in the first round and generally go out. Like at most they go to the second rounds. Like, can one of those teams kind of buck that trend a la the 2012 Thunder and actually make it to a conference finals, maybe even an NBA finals. So I'm really excited to see what those teams can do, and especially like the star of each of those teams, what they do in their first playoffs. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Anthony Edwards, Tyrese Halliburton that you mentioned, Paolo that we mentioned, guys like that. I get really excited to see the new young stars in their first playoffs and how they respond to like the increase in intensity.
Ah, man, I love it. I'm so excited for that same exact thing. You mentioned there's so many teams. You know, the Thunder are now looking at New Orleans, Golden State, or Sacramento, depending how this thing shakes up in the next couple of days. Good luck.
Yeah. It's tough, but like in the Western Conference, every matchup's tough.
Yeah, really. Dude, everything's like, a fight.
You're gonna be tough, and the Thunder were the number one seed for a reason. They won what, 57 games? Like,
yeah.
I don't think they should be scared of anybody. Like, I don't think, especially, you know, a 8, 9, 10 seed. I think
if it was the Lakers, they should have been scared. But yeah, everyone else, maybe. Yeah.
Well, because the Lakers are the complete contrast to them, right?
Right.
You can use their size and physicality. That's what I'm really excited to see. Like, which of those stars, or all of them, or a couple of them, like which of them step up and have incredible performances the way we saw Zion do tonight. And can those performances result in their teams advancing in the playoffs and everything? That's always something I get excited for every playoffs. And I feel like this one, there's even more, like more young, super talented stars in the playoffs for the first or maybe second time, that and seeing how they respond.
Yeah, man, for sure. All right. I think you know where I'm going for my final excitement in the East.
Okay.
Even though I absolutely dread watching this team play on a day-to-day basis, there's one particular player who I very much enjoy watching on a night-to-night basis on this terrible team. And dude, I get Coby White in a winner go home game. And like, there's not much more you can ask for as far as exciting players in you got to ball out or your team's done kind of games. And the way he improved this year and what he was able to do, I mean, for a team that is terrible, for a team that lost their highest paid player and had, you know, granted, DeMar DeRozan was incredible after the All-Star break, but they were going out there playing 2-on-5 on offense most nights, and he was fighting with everybody. He was competing with everybody. That Knicks game the other day, they lose in double overtime, but he was great. He was so good. And I know the game didn't mean as much for the Knicks, obviously, really for either of the teams, because they were on kind of the side of the seedings. But I get to see him have a chance to kind of keep this going this season, where there's a lot of Bulls fans, and you know a lot of Bulls fans, obviously, from your time living in Chicago. There are people starting to believe you build around Coby White, my friend. And I wouldn't go that crazy. But I get to watch him take all the shots he wants and try to win them one more game to see if they can get to the postseason. Love it. Bring it to me 4 nights a week.
I love your eternal optimism about, even when you're not optimistic, you somehow sound optimistic when it comes to Chicago Bulls. it's incredibly endearing. I've really enjoyed watching Coby White play this year. I think he is definitely the bright light on a pretty dim franchise right now. And I think he's a real piece, maybe not a star, but a real piece on a good team. And to be honest, like with the Bulls, it's not the segment, but I would be more excited like about the what can you do with this team in the offseason to make it more.
I am.
but I agree with you. When you're a fan of a bad team, the fun thing about the play-in, and that was going to be one of my things I'm just excited about, just the play-in in general, because it's awesome. And even though everyone questioned it and made fun of it, it's been a fantastic addition. But to see Bulls are a good example that were really disappointing, but they get one more life, right? This is their one more life. And can they, you know, almost in a March Madness style, win a couple games to get to the playoffs, even if they get smoked by a Celtics or something, like just to create some kind of good feeling and momentum for into next year.
Yeah. Because let's just be honest, Zach LaVine's going to be on the team next year because no one's trading for him. It's going to take a lot to get someone to take him on. Yeah. Probably the Bulls eating a lot of salary.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the highlight at least is apparently Lonzo Ball's going to play basketball next year. I'll believe it when I see it. So yeah, I think just getting him, like you said, in that kind of that March Madness style where he did that once before on a North Carolina team that went to the Sweet 16 and lost to Auburn before they went on their Final Four run. He gets a chance to do it again. Let's do it. I'm in.
Yeah, no, I more power to you. I will hate watch that game, that Bulls Hawks game tomorrow.
Safe. I don't drink anymore, but I might have a couple drinks just to sit through that one. Especially because the Reds play at 4:00, so I have to watch it. I don't have a choice.
Yeah.
God, it's going to be brutal. All right, let's go to the West.
Okay.
And one of my excitement watches for all the wrong reasons is what are the Clippers going to look like? Yeah. So I hate this team because they're the Clippers. I did enjoy watching them when things were going well in stretches this year with those four guys. Once they moved Westbrook to the bench and they were kind of, those three were figured out how to play together. But I guess there's already been reports that Kawhi Leonard is not feeling his best. And in this series, you've got all these dudes who are super awesome. Paul George, James Harden. And on the other end, you have Kyrie Irving, who, like, we finally went through a year where it wasn't some insane Kyrie Irving story. It was like, I just played basketball and had fun. It was great. So he's happy, and like happy Kyrie is really fun to watch play basketball. And you have Luka, who, yeah, I make fun of because he complains about every single call under the sun, but is also one of the three best players in the world, playing together in the series against those two guys. So how do these two teams play against each other? Because I don't think the Clippers can guard Luka and Kyrie, but I also not 100% certain the Mavericks can guard, you know, James Harden, Norman Powell. So like, what is this series going to look like?
Yeah, I agree. And we can tie one of my exciting things into this same matchup is like, what does Luka Kyrie look like in the playoffs? Because it's looked phenomenal.
It's so like, fun to watch.
Like better than anyone could have expected. Right. And yeah. Into this series, like talking picks, I would definitely pick the Mavs in this series. I just think they're more able to handle adversity than the Clippers.
Good point.
And don't expect, you know, Clippers are just a hard team to have faith in, I think.
They are, man. So. They are.
But yeah, no, kind of speaking on the Luka Kyrie thing, I think it's everyone questioned them re-signing Kyrie, and I think how they've played together has like exceeded really anybody's expectations. And will that carry over in the playoffs when things get more intense? Will they, you know, resort back to like taking turns opposed to actually playing together and everything? And so, yeah, I'm really interested in that dynamic.
They're so fascinating to me because I don't necessarily love their roster. But they are finding ways to win games, and Daniel Gafford getting him from Washington at the deadline was such a great piece for them. And I thought it would just be like that's good. And it turned out to be like great for them as far as a screener, a rim protector, drafted by the Chicago Bulls. Avi Portis, drafted by the Chicago Bulls, by the way. What a title. Big part of a playoff team.
Yeah.
All right, that's not what we're here. But I think this is going to be fascinating. And like you mentioned, I just think watching Luka and Kyrie together. And like I said, no insane Earth is Flat, controversial documentaries promotions, just playing basketball Kyrie Irving is wonderful. And I'm really excited that we get to have that for a little longer.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'll just go with that because I kind of like tied into yours, but like, so my second one for the West and kind of going back to the Thunder and like, how does their style translate into the playoffs? Because the worry with them were they so good in the regular season because, you know, it was more stylistic. They have younger guys. They played every night. They had, I think, more starters start games than any other team in the league. You know, kind of a weird stat, but means a lot in the NBA.
For sure.
And so how will those style translate in the playoffs? And will the one big criticism is that they didn't get more interior size for especially defensive rebounding help at the deadline. Will that come back to bite them? I hope not, because I love watching that team play so much. I would love to see them, no matter how far they go, just play really well, put a good show on in the playoffs. But I am interested. I think that is, if I have a fear with them, it's that their style and their youth served them in the regular season where it may not serve them in the playoffs.
I agree. I've been on record to say that if I had an MVP vote, I for sure would have gone to Shea. I just think that what he did this year and on that team, and I understand it's going to go to Jokic, and Shea probably will be in like fourth in voting, but that what he did this year was awesome and incredible for that team after all the years they've kind of had in recent memory. So what he's been able to do. And yeah, I think that for them, it kind of almost goes back. It's like a better version of what we were just talking about with the Pacers, right? It's okay. What is this the start of? Obviously there was that like conversation that Jalen Williams had with Kevin Durant about, hey man, we're just one piece away from being really special. If you just feel like you want to come back here to end your career. And that would be, so not that I want to get into the off court stuff, or otherwise we would have had a lengthy conversation about what's Paul George going to do. But I think that that's going to be really fun to see how they match up, because like we said, they're going to be playing either the Kings, the Warriors, or the Pelicans. And talent wise, I like them better than all those teams, but size wise, I think I like all the other teams better.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. No, I agree. I think I think just as from a whole team perspective, they're the team I'm most interested to see in the playoffs. And if their regular season performance translates to the playoffs, because so many of the older teams, they just kind of buy their time to the playoffs. Thunder was like, you know, foot on the gas all season. And
they were.
And so I enjoy watching the team so much. I hope they have success, but I have some reservations.
Yeah, I do too. All right. My next one, and I'm sure you're probably leaning the same way I am in this conversation. What does Anthony Edwards versus Kevin Durant look like in a playoff series? This is so fascinating to me because Durant is, besides LeBron, you know, the second most generational player of this era. Well, no, I take that back, because Steph's there. Third most generational player of this era. And you have Anthony Edwards, who has become just a superstar in the world's eyes, has his own signature shoe, all these things. And I'm not saying they're going to really guard each other in this series, though Anthony Edwards probably wants to guard him with the confidence he always has in himself. I think when I look at this series, obviously the Booker-Durant combination is so lethal. But the thing we all talked about all year with Phoenix, and they've kind of owned Minnesota all year, is just like, they're not deep. And Rudy Gobert has this thing when playoff series where he just decides that he's not the best defender in the world anymore because he gets hunted in pick and rolls. So I'm really curious to see how that's going to look, but I'm really excited to see what this series looks like, because they have two guys in the sense of Durant and Edwards in the series where it's like when their team's down 10, they may have a tendency to try to score 11 in one possession to take the lead. So what does that look like when the series starts to go that way?
Yeah, no, I agree. And that was something I considered as well. This Timberwolves-Suns thing makes no sense, that if you look at this season, like the Suns dominated them.
Yeah.
And you would think it would be the other way around. You would think the Timberwolves are a bad matchup for the Suns. Like, and so it's one of those, I don't really understand the dynamic between those teams, that the Suns seem to have their number. and kind of will that carry into the playoffs? But I'm with you. Anthony Edwards is one of my favorite players to watch right now. And he seems like the type of guy that would really take the stage in the playoffs and put on some really incredible performances. So I don't know. I think that might be the most competitive. Like if you ask me, like, of all these series, like, which one do you think is most likely to go seven games? I think it would be T-Wolves Suns.
I did too.
Yeah.
I'm curious what Bradley Beal looks like in this series, because it's kind of the conversation we have about D'Angelo Russell to a higher extent, in the sense that all those years in Washington, when they were going to the playoffs and losing, it was up to him and Wall, and mostly him, because Wall is facilitating the offense. For him now, it's kind of, what does his role look like in a postseason series when you're playing with Booker and Durant? So I'm really, really fascinated to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I do too. I do, like, I get it. I don't have a lot of faith. That's one of the reasons I don't have faith in the Suns' complementary parts. And I put Bradley Beal in as one of their complementary parts. I mean, everybody outside of Booker and Durant. And so all of my instincts are saying, like, you know, pick the T-Wolves and everything, but then the Suns have just had their number all year. So I'm not sure. I think this ends up being potentially the most competitive series of the first round.
Yeah, I think both coaches are good coaches too. I think Frank Vogel's kind of got a raw deal from the Lakers, to be honest. But yeah, I think so. That's going to be fun. All right. I think then that leads me to, am I my second or my third? Oh, my third.
I think we're on our thirds. Yeah.
Cool. Lost track, having so much fun. All right. The obvious question of, are the Nuggets going to repeat? And I think that this is so interesting because they obviously won last year in the Deep Western Conference, but this Western Conference is so much better. And I think we kind of said already, we expect they'll beat the Lakers in the first round. So you win the first round, you're playing Minnesota or Phoenix. Okay. What does that matchup look like? You win that one. Okay. You're playing likely, potentially Oklahoma City. Probably expecting to win that game. Okay. Then you're probably playing the Celtics if everything goes the way we've come. If everything shakes out the way this conversation has gone tonight. This road is not easy at all. There's no Miami Heat going through the play-in, Los Angeles Lakers going through the play-in and finding you. It's... you guys have a much harder road to get to the championship than you did last year. And don't get me wrong, I think they will get back to the championship, but we're relying, like you said, what if Jamal Murray twists his ankle? What if Michael Porter Jr. has these really bad performances we've seen him have in the past? What if KCP just forgets, has the old KCP moments from Washington show up, or the Detroit Pistons KCP shows up that we've seen at times since then? How do they replace, how do they recover from that? How do they move forward from that? And they're obviously have so many really good players on their team and so many awesome complimentary pieces to Jokic, but this is not the easy road they had last year to get to the championship. So how much, if they do make to the finals, are they going to be beat up when they got to go play a Celtics team who's arguably just as good as they are?
This is my number three, a little bit more specific of your number three. It's kind of the league versus Jokic. Have teams figured out how to contain him at all? Because the last three plus years, he's been as dominant as anybody since prime LeBron. And it's not artistic. It is in some ways, but it's very atypical of the way a player usually dominates the NBA. But it's still awesome to watch. And he has been, you know, with Embiid being fairly close, like, but he's definitely been the best player in the NBA for three plus years now. Yeah. And the way he dominates the whole game, again, in a different way, but much like LeBron did, how he doesn't have to score 40 points to dominate the game. He ends up with a casual triple double. And so that was kind of very similar to yours, just a little bit more specific. Like, can any of these teams in the West or whoever comes out of the East contain him enough to beat Denver in a series, assuming Denver's at full health? And so I don't know. I'm kind of like you. I would bet on them to reach the finals and then flip a coin between them and the Celtics. But yeah, I'll be interested, since the West is so much stronger, can someone knock out Denver, or at very least offer more resistance than teams did last year?
It's such an interesting thing, because if the Lakers play to their ceiling, they can for sure fight with this team, not beat them, mm-hmm. but they can definitely wear them down before the next series.
Right.
So it's kind of going through that. And then you look at like the teams we just kind of listed through. Your point's probably better than mine, in the sense of it's the world trying to figure out Jokic now. And then Jokic is going to be playing the U.S. Olympic team in round one. Mm-hmm. That just decided their 12-man roster of the Olympics. So, that's a conversation for another day. I'm definitely going to have you back for that one. It's going to be really, really interesting to see just how all of that comes together, because if Murray and Jokic are doing what they do, just call it a day. But I still don't love Aaron Gordon. I know he's been really awesome for them. I just don't ever get excited about Aaron Gordon as far as being a big part of a title team. And I know he won a title last year, but I'm like, yeah, but it's Aaron Gordon. Like, are we sure we trust him? And it's just me being wrong. But
no, well, I don't think you're wrong. It's that you trust Aaron Gordon playing next to Jokic because he's a perfect complementary piece to him.
Yes, yes.
And if you didn't trust Orlando Aaron Gordon, you wouldn't trust him if he went to another team. But he is a perfect complementary for what Jokic does, and Jokic to bring the best version out of him. So I think just kind of shift your feeling. I trust Aaron Gordon as long as he's playing next to Jokic.
That's the right way to put it. Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, I think those were fun.
Yeah.
All right. Let's close out on the Eastern Conference play-in, because we're not recording during that, so we can at least give analysis. Let me check real quick while we're doing this, just to see what the score is in that game. Oh, okay, 54-50 Kings.
Okay.
Not bad. I would like to see the Kings win, though. Sure. I absolutely love Steph Curry, and I will watch all the Steph Curry basketball I possibly can. Used to be a Steph hater. Not even going to lie to you, Kevin. When he was beating LeBron in the finals every year, I was really upset with him. But we're cool now.
I feel like he's a hard guy to hate.
Yeah. Especially because he beat the Celtics for a championship. Like, we're cool.
No, that's good. Can I fire off my hot take for the Eastern Conference play-in? Here it is. The Heat don't make the playoffs.
Oh. Oh, so you think they lose to Philly and Chicago? There's no way you're going to come on my show and say that the Hawks are going to beat the Bulls.
I don't know. I don't know. This is more – Philly would not be in the play-in if Embiid doesn't miss two-plus months this season, right?
Yeah.
I think we probably agree Philly is a heavy favorite to beat Miami tomorrow. And assuming that happens – I think at some point the whole, like, we're just sandbagging till the playoffs, like resting Jimmy Butler 30 something games. And even though he wasn't injured all year, like, and everything, like, I think, you know, they haven't played with intensity pretty much the whole year. And to turn that up for one game to put it in the playoffs, I like the odds of, whether it is the Bulls or the Hawks, like just having one, you know, crazy game and the Heat just not being prepared for it. And so anyway, that's my hot take for the Eastern playoffs. Like, Philly's a 7 seed, and whoever comes out of the Bulls Hawks game would be the 8 seed.
That Bulls Hawks game should be punishable by crime.
Yeah.
That should just not exist.
Yes.
We should go ahead and give one of the other Western Conference teams the 8th seed.
The 10 seed in the West had 10 more wins than the Hawks did.
Yeah. Dude, the Houston Rockets had more wins than these two teams.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Let's just go ahead and put that out there. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and say that I'm for sure with you, because Philly, if Embiid doesn't get hurt, I mean, they were trending as a top 4 seed. They were trending for home court advantage. Yeah. They were awesome. Tyrese Maxey took that huge step this year with having Embiid there. I thought getting Buddy Hield the deadline was terrific. It turned out to be a really good piece for them. I really liked when they were in Texas and they practiced at his house. I thought that was kind of neat. And they just have so many good players. I mean, the haul they got for Harden in that trade, all those guys at one point or another stepped up big for the Sixers this year.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really big. So yeah, tomorrow, I mean, unless Butler has a 45-point game,
yeah,
which I don't think Spo's going to let him have one of those when they, because the Heat are so big on just like staying in shape and staying in trending and to do you treading water until you really have to kick it into gear. So I think they'll win that. I see what you're saying, and I don't think you're wrong, but when I look at the talent level of those last three teams, oh, by the way, I didn't mention Kyle Lowry probably wants to beat the Heat really bad. Mm-hmm. Too, yeah. So. I look at Miami against Chicago and Atlanta, and I mean, you could probably make the case Atlanta might be more talented than Chicago with what Jalen Johnson did this year, but I just trust Miami more than I trust those other three teams. And by the way, we did figure out Quinn Snyder, totally overrated head coach, by the way. Totally overrated.
Yeah. Look, if it was a series, there's no way I'd pick either of those teams against the Heat.
Right. But in a one game.
Yeah. One game, something crazy could happen. And, you know, something about the Bulls and Hawks kind of, you know, they had to play more meaningful basketball just to make sure they're getting in the playoffs and all that kind of stuff. And I just don't like the Heat's approach. They kind of ended up in the play-in last year and then took it all the way to the NBA finals. And it seemed like this whole season, they just assumed they could do the same thing and they just coasted through the whole season. So I either believe this take or it's out of spite that I just don't like teams that like take the regular season for granted, because then it makes me feel like I'm losing money paying for League Pass.
I feel you. That's why you buy 2K and then you get League Pass for free.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. All right. So Bulls Hawks, unfortunately, that's a game that is happening. I just think DeRozan and Kobe, I know they've got Trae Young and DeJounte Murray, and you know, Jalen Johnson has been tremendous with his improvements this year, but I just don't enjoy this Hawks team, and they don't enjoy this team either. Like, they're waiting to be done so they can blow these, they can trade these two guys, one of these two guys away from each other. They've been pretty obvious about that. I mean, their Trae Young Lakers Heat smoke has grown quite a bit in the last couple weeks. When at first it was like, oh yeah, that'd be funny. And now it's like, oh damn it, I don't want to root for Trae Young. I just think that in that circumstance, I don't know, maybe Billy Donovan really wanted that Kentucky job and he's still pissed off he's in Chicago.
Yeah. I don't
know. But I just think that in that case, DeRozan's a guy who's been there, done that. He's been a one seed before. He knows how to win these games. He's already posted his daughter's going to be in attendance, which helped him out a lot last year at Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
So give me the Bulls tomorrow and then give me the Heat on Friday.
Yeah, I, you know what? It's your podcast. I'll give me the Sixers and Bulls tomorrow. Then the Bulls beat the Heat on Friday night.
Man, I don't know if I really want that, but
and then you have to watch another 2 weeks of the Bulls.
Yeah, just sit there and begrudgingly hate every moment of it.
Yeah, that'd make it all worth it. No, I don't know. Sometimes you go with a gut feeling. And again, might be spite that the Heat were a bottom three team for me to enjoy watching on League Pass this year. That maybe that's the reason I'm not picking them. But, you know, these play-ins, I feel like there's going to be an upset at some points. And that's where I saw it for the final spot in the East.
Yeah. Hey, man, I can see it for sure. All right, well, Kevin, this was awesome. I'm so happy to have you back on. Thanks for killing an hour with me after the Laker game tonight. I appreciate you. We're going to go ahead and wrap this week's edition up of the NBA Friday. Man, we have a lot of stuff to get to through here on the Riverfront U channel. A lot of transfer news in Xavier and UC this week. Lots of transfer news that we have to touch on. So we should be getting to show with all that information coming up here in the near future, as well as everything here going on the riverfront. The Reds, as you know, are in play. So check out myself and Ben on Sundays with Late Night Reds and Chad and Nate Dotson and their crew of friends on the Riverfront Reds show on Fridays. They're having a lot of fun over there. And then Welcome to the Jungle with Joe and Parker. Our Bengals podcast got a nice new name, new paint job. Like to see it. So check that out as well. As always, if you're checking us out on YouTube for the first time, please take a moment to give a subscription. If you're listening to us on your podcast app of choice, please take a second to give us a nice solid review. On behalf of Kevin Lynch, this is Tim Daniel. Thank you all. Have a great night.